Good evening. Here is the news for parrots.
This is episode 6 of Chat with a Cat. I was going to try to get one in just prior to the end of the regular season. Couldn't do that. Was out traveling after that. But I'm back now. This episode is being recorded just after the completion of the second round of the playoffs for the 1980 season of the NPBSL. We have a little bit to talk about since our last podcast. We've had the end of the regular season, we've had regular season awards, and we've had two rounds of playoff games. So it'll be interesting to dive in and see what's happened since the last recording. And we will start with the final standings. Now, I will admit I did not go back and listen to the previous pod immediately before this to confirm what my guesses were for who finishes out the season ahead of each division. But I believe I called the Atlantic going to Boston correctly, the Central going to Indiana, and the Pacific going to Phoenix. I do think I got the Midwest wrong. San Antonio got on a real hot streak to end the season. Denver and Dallas kind of beat up on each other a little bit. I thought whoever whoever won their game to start the final sim of the season would have the inside track on the division lead, but it looks like San Antonio came through and kind of snuck it out from under both of them. Even though San Antonio had the second largest, actually the third largest point differential in the division, they were able to come through and take it away from Denver and Dallas, which surprised me a little bit. Generally, I have found that one of the best indicators for record and also for playoff performance, whatever you want to call it, is your point differential. And yeah, if we look in the East, Boston finished with a plus 3.5 on the season. New Jersey finished with 0.7. No surprise that Boston managed to finish ahead. Indiana finished with a point differential of 7.6. That was trending down. It was near 10 for most of the season, so they kind of slowed up at the end. But Milwaukee, even though they had a great season, was only at 5.2, and sure enough, Indiana finished up with the division crown. Dallas actually had the best point differential at 3.7, Denver had 3.6, and San Antonio 2.5, and they were separated by two games, so yeah, there's enough variance that, you know, two games separation doesn't shock me. It would have been weird to see San Antonio win by 10, but when you win the division by a game or two, if you're the second or third best in point differential, yeah, kind of makes sense. And then the Pacific, Portland finished 5.1, Phoenix finished 4.4, but Phoenix had such a huge lead in the standings going into the final week, it allowed them to just kind of coast through and make it into the playoffs. So, you know, that kind of, I guess, wraps up regular season standings. No real huge surprises for me, really. You know, obviously, at the end of the last podcast, was mentioning that people could, you know, move up or down a little bit in the playoff seedings, but I didn't see anything that really shocked me. The one thing that I guess was kind of interesting was seeing the final playoff spot in the Western Conference come down to a tiebreaker between the Lakers and Golden State. Obviously, the Lakers came out on the better end of that tiebreaker, which got them into the playoffs as the sixth seed. And we'll get to the playoffs in a minute, but first I want to look over the regular season awards, since I spent quite a bit of time talking about how I fully expected Moses Malone to win league MVP. And if we start at the top, quite obviously, Moses Malone is not your league MVP. That went to Magic Johnson, which, I'll be honest, kind of surprised me, given that Moses had won so many players of the month over Magic. So the race must have been very, very close. But congratulations to Magic on winning MVP and to the Phoenix Suns for drafting him first overall and having that borne out. Now, As we'll get to in a few moments, Magic did get injured at the very end of the regular season. That did wind up hurting Phoenix in the playoffs. The rookie of the year is Joe Barry Carroll of Indiana. I can't say that's a surprise. Defensive player of the year being Kareem in Boston. That was a little bit of a surprise to me. I didn't think I didn't think when I was looking through stuff that Kareem looked that dominant. You know, he's a great scorer, but you know, 8.5 rebounds and 2.8 blocks. That he leads the league in blocks, but there were a lot of players that had plenty more rebounds than Kareem. So congratulations to Kareem and Boston for picking that up, but that one was kind of a surprise to me. Sixth man of the year, there's really no way to gauge this from the regular season awards. The in-season awards, you know, player of the week, player of the month. James Silas of Indiana came up with that, so Indiana has two of the top five award winners. The most improved player was Magic Johnson of Phoenix. I mean, I guess it makes sense. It's hard to tell improvement in year one of a league, so that one I didn't bother thinking about on the theory that that one's just hard to gauge. If we look at our all-league teams, your all-league first team was Moses Malone, as expected, Magic Johnson, Alex English of Denver, George Gervin and Adrian Dantley of Dallas and Indiana, respectively, were your guards. Everybody on that list averaged over 30 points a game. That's a really strong group there. You know, you're representing Phoenix, which was the number one seed in the West, Indiana, the number one seed in the East, Denver and Dallas, also playoff teams. So Moses didn't have, I guess, enough of a team around him to make noise in the playoffs. But makes sense that four of the five first teamers are on quality playoff teams. Your all-league second team was Kareem out of Boston. Again, a little bit of a surprise there. Again, just based on the low rebounding frame for Kareem, but I guess the block shots really helped. Calvin Natt and Larry Bird, no surprise there. They picked up a lot of players of the week. Walter Davis of Milwaukee picked up some players of the week. The selection of Bernard King out of Portland, I know he's on my team, but that one kind of surprised me. Bernard King didn't even make an all-star team, didn't win any players of the week as far as I can remember, so that one was kind of one that was difficult to see coming. I think he does fine. Is he better than a couple of the all-league third team guards? I don't think so, and I'll get to in a minute why I think he's second team and not third team here. The all-league third team was Joe Barry Carroll of Indiana, also rookie of the year, so that tells you Indiana, between Adrian Dantley and Joe Barry Carroll, had two all-league representatives on their team. No wonder they're the number one seed in the East. Down round field of Detroit, he's been a very good player. I thought he'd be good. I didn't know he'd be this good during the dispersal draft. So good to see Roundfield doing well. Julius Erving out of New York, John Long out of Phoenix. So again, Phoenix, the number one seed in the West, has two all-league team members. And then Kiki Vandeweghe of Utah finished as the last member of the all-league third team. Now, you look at Kiki's splits, he's averaging 31.6 rebounds, 4 assists, which is more in all of those categories than John Long. It's more than Bernard King. It's more than Walter Davis. Well, except the assists. Walter has a few more assists. You really can't argue putting him over Gervin or Dantley with those averages, but then you ask, you know, why was Kiki only third team when he kind of outdueled the second team guards? I think the answer is the number of games played. He only played three quarters of the season at 61 games, whereas the other players were in the high 70s and you know, a couple played 82. So it does show you that the awards voting is not just about averages. It's about, you know, aggregated stats. It's averages over the course of a long season. Moving on. I thought the all-defensive team was kind of interesting, seeing Kareem is not a surprise as the DPOY. Julius Erving out of New York being an all-league defender. I didn't see that coming. We generally think of Dr. J as an offensive player. Similarly, Magic Johnson was named an all-league defender at the forward spot. Again, defense is not something I normally think of when I think of Magic, and so you have to wonder... Is this something that is based on reputation? Is it something that is based on team success? I don't know. I'd have to go look more deeply at, you know, box score splits to see how players played against them. But at least off the top of my head, that's a little bit surprising to me that they're both all league and all defense contributors. Ray Williams of Milwaukee, less of a surprise. Michael Cooper of Chicago, definitely not a surprise. His offensive stats at only 13.5 points a game clearly mean that his contributions were on the other side of the ball. Similarly, on the all-defense second team, George Johnson, New Jersey center, averaged 3 blocks, which I think led the league, but only 8 points and 6 rebounds. So he was a great starter next to Daryl Dawkins at power forward, because Johnson could take the big men, did a lot of the shot blocking, but left Dawkins free to score and rebound. So I really like that pairing. I think, you know, George Johnson could probably use some work on getting his rebounding up. He's definitely never going to be an offensive monster, but leading block shots, that's no small thing. Your other all-league defenders were Robert Reed of Chicago, Don Collins of San Antonio, Mo Cheeks of Boston, Walter Davis of Milwaukee. Again, with Walter Davis, you've got an all-league player who also made the all-defensive team. So I'm sure Doug/IamQuailman is pretty happy about that. Finally, as you go to the all-rookie first team, Joe Barry Carroll, not a surprise. He was the rookie of the year. Mike Woodson of Philly, Edgar Jones of Chicago, not names I had necessarily on my bingo card. Kiki Vandeweghe of Utah, that was a shoe-in. Andrew Toney of San Antonio, very good. Kevin McHale of San Antonio, very good. Bill Hanslick of Milwaukee got injured at the end of the regular season, and I have to wonder if that allowed for the New Jersey upset, because he was a player that I thought might have been able to slow Chocolate Thunder down in their matchup. But of course, you know, you can't deal in what ifs, you have to deal with what's in front of you. But what it does mean is that Milwaukee is going to get some bolstering in their front court come next season. Earl Cureton of Washington, 11 points a game, it's fine. Johnny Moore of Dallas, 10 points a game, is fine. Larry Drew of New Jersey, 16.8 points. I think Larry Drew is kind of the unsung member of New Jersey. Everybody has been talking about Daryl Dawkins all season, and, you know, rightly so. Dawkins finished the season averaging, almost 30 points a game, 8 rebounds a game. Cliff Robinson was their young stud, averaging 21.7, but they were getting a lot of production out of their backcourt, too. T.R. Dunn was averaging 15 a game. Larry Drew averaged 16.5 points a game. The one concern I would have for Drew going forward is his field goal shooting was only 37%. I would much rather see those shots going to Daryl Dawkins, who's shooting 55%. But I guess it just goes to show if you shoot enough, you have enough volume, you can get the points. But Larry Drew does have a lot of room to improve. He's currently a yellow rated player with a future potential of blue. So I expect him to make the jump next season, and we'll see an even tougher New Jersey team when that happens. So that kind of goes through, I guess, the major awards. GM of the Year, the computer voted for Doug. Given that Doug was the one that swung the biggest trade of the season in trading for Robert Parrish, I think that's probably correct. I don't know who else I would have voted for. I guess you could say someone who did a terrific job in the expansion draft, maybe, but I don't think, you know, you could say Ed did a good job of picking up Daryl Dawkins in round 3, or, you know, the Pistons with Roundfield did well, but nobody had multiple picks where you just went, wow. Everybody, you know, maybe had one player that stood out as, you know, maybe they went around too late, but I don't think there was anybody that you just looked at them and said, you know, they're playing checkers while everybody else, or they're playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers. I thought the initial draft was fairly fairly evenly done. Nobody struck me as incredible. The players that should have gone first went first. The players that should have gone later, by and large, went later. Giving it to Doug for swinging the biggest trade of the season. Yeah, that makes sense to me. That tracks. So not at all mad about that selection. I'm going to take a quick break. As you can tell, I'm having a little bit of a coughing fit. Going to grab something to drink, hopefully. And I'll be back in a couple, and we'll talk about the playoffs. I don't have the drop from Pete Carroll, or not Pete Carroll, who is it? Anyway, NFL coach that went crazy about playoffs. We're talking about playoffs. But we'll come back and we'll talk through the playoffs and look how those series went.
Some burgers.
Hey, kids, I know. Let's get some fungus.
Yeah! Do you want some mushrooms?
Mushrooms.
Or some spores?
Munch some mildew.
Mildew.
You'll want more. Just get out of that fast food rut. Come on down to the fungus hut.
Say, when you get that craving for mushrooms, molds, or any kind of parasitic lower plant life that lacks chlorophyll, come on down to the Fungus Hut.
We have deep-fried toadstools, mold shakes, and for dessert, hot mushroom pie.
No, thanks. We'll just have a big bucket of fungus.
Yeah!
So come out of the sunlight and discover the dank, musty world that's popping up near you.
So get out of that fast food rut. Come on down. The fungus hut.
It's fungi licking good.
You think you know theme parks? You haven't had fun until you've come to
Philosopher World.
Screw the mouse. Forget the mountain. Busch Gardens is for pussies. You want a theme park? Philosopher World is the place for you. Enter Plato's Allegory of the Cave.
You may never come out.
Strap yourself into the fastest scientific yet secular perspective towards statecraft, the Mach 3 Iavelli. Try the utilitarian ride. It gets you to the end of the ride, and that's all that matters. Every ride is a tabula rasa, waiting to be strapped around your waist and grabbed onto for dear life.
You'll never lose your absolute spirits with this much to do.
St. Thomas Aquinas' log ride.
Ready to go kart.
Hustle's Leviathan.
Twirl yourself silly on the hoses. Spinoza.
Find Thoreau in the forest land scavenger hunt.
And kids, try the new Burden's Ass Petting Zoo.
One ride, and you'll be coming back for Thomas More.
God may be dead, but heaven is a place called
Philosopher World.
Warning, in order for some rides to work, you must consciously think that you are riding them.
So one of the things that dawned on me during the break there is I mentioned how I had put together some predictions for end of the season. I realized that was in the quote-unquote lost episode of the show. I tried recording it like five times, and every time the recording like died about three quarters of the way through, and everything was lost and deleted. That would have been done after the 11th out of 12 Sims of the season. So when I reference back to who I thought was a surprise winning division, I guess you'll just have to take my word for it. Those are the lost basement tapes, I guess, of the Chat with a Cat show. So for those of you that were a little confused earlier, sorry about that. Now I realize where those were from. Without further ado, we're going to get into taking a look at the playoffs. Round one, obviously, Phoenix and San Antonio got byes, Boston and Indiana got byes, which meant you had four playoff series for round one. In the West, you had Denver hosting Dallas and Portland hosting the Lakers, so you had a Midwest and a Pacific matchup. Out East, you had Milwaukee and New Jersey in a cross-division matchup, and then Cleveland and Chicago in a Central Division matchup. We'll just kind of go through them in order. not a, a terribly surprising sequence in the West. Denver actually did surprise me by sweeping Dallas. I thought Dallas and Denver would go more than four games, mostly because their point differential during the season was very, very close. And so I assumed, and perhaps, you know, wrongly, but, you know, I assumed that Dallas would be able to at least win on their home court and stretch things to six or seven. But what wound up happening is Denver blew the doors off of Dallas in game one and game two. They won game three by 8 points. And then the final game, they, I would say, eked out a three-point victory. But if you go and take a look at the game logs, they were actually up by six until Johnny Moore hit a three-pointer at the buzzer to make the score look a little bit better. You know, going down the stretch, they did pull to within two, with about 2 minutes remaining, and then Denver, you know, pushed it up to a six-point lead and kept it there. So, you know, kind of a disappointing, I think, end of the season for Dallas. And as they go into the offseason, I kind of wonder what their plan is. Their starting center, Caldwell Jones, is 30. Their starting power forward, Dan Issel, is 32. George Gervin is 29. Johnny Moore is 23, so they do have a young piece to build around. But, you know, looking at most of their big contributors, they're in their 30s. So this was a team that was kind of built to win now. And now that the season is over, they're headed to the offseason, and they can expect most of those players probably to age and decline a little bit, as opposed to aging and getting better. So, you know, for Dallas, that's, you know, again, it's probably a disappointing finish, you know, given where they finished, given their point differential all year. I think they would have been able to stomach, you know, let's say losing 4-3 with both teams holding serve, but to be swept out is a little bit demoralizing, especially when you don't have a young team coming back the following year. For Denver, you know, John Lucas is 27. Mike Okor and their other guard is 23. Alex English and Bobby Jones are 27, 29. And Mickey Johnson is 28. So all of their starters are still in their prime. They have a year or two left. You know, the question for them is going to be, do they feel good about this, or do they feel that they need to swing a trade to make a step up, or maybe trade now while their players are in their prime to start stockpiling future assets? I think Denver is very pleased with their first round sweep. You know, depending on how the rest of the postseason goes, maybe they feel like they can run it back, or maybe they feel they're a piece away. Similarly, Portland swept LA 4-0. I was very surprised by this one, simply because with a couple of games to go in the season, Bernard King went down with an injury, and I'm not sure he's going to be back unless Portland makes it through like four games of the finals. Odds of that happening pretty low, I think. But they did beat the Lakers 4-0, which again surprised me. I don't know how you do that after losing an all-league second team player. I guess the answer is with a couple of close wins. You know, game two was a 2-point victory. Game three was a 1-point victory. So even though it was a sweep, it probably was a little, you know, closer than that, if you will. you know, the decisive bucket, you know, as I go through the box scores here, for the Blazers was actually free throws from David Thompson coming with 29 seconds to go in game two. And in game three, you know, again, just looking at the play-by-play, sorry, not the box scores, you know, you find out that they had a little bit of a larger lead, but, you know, they had a 2-point lead with 15 seconds to go. Cedric Maxwell makes a couple free throws to ice it. So a 3-pointer by World Be Free cuts the deficit to one, but that's not enough. So, you know, again, these were tightly contested games. LA even led game three with a minute and a half to go by 2 points. So, you know, I think the Lakers should feel pretty good, as good as you can feel about a sweep. in terms of, you know, having lost two games by, you know, a total of 3 points. On the other hand, do they feel good knowing that Portland was down their all-league player? Maybe not. I do think it's also kind of funny that these two teams collided, considering the second biggest trade behind the Bucks trade for Robert Parrish was probably the Bill Cartwright for James Donaldson trade. And one of the things that I thought was kind of fun watching in this series was the matchup. Donaldson averaged 11.8 points, 9.6 rebounds, and 2 blocks on 52% shooting, which is slightly better than what he was averaging on the season for Portland before the trade. Not what he averaged on the regular season, but Cartwright went for 19.7 points, 7.6 boards, and 1.8 blocks. So kind of, you know, offset him in the rebounding and blocks categories, but scored more. And I'm guessing, and this is just me, the part of the reason that Cartwright scored more was he was being called to score upon more with Bernard King being out with an injury. So, yeah. Again, the Lakers, I think, are going to be happy with Donaldson going forward. They did put some training in to increase his offensive capabilities, and they're going to be getting another first-round draft pick out of it, which will probably give them a green potential player. So I think LA is probably pretty happy with how things ended there. Both of these teams are young, can expect to grow and get better. Jamal Wilkes and World Be Free at 28 and 27 are both kind of in their primes, but I don't expect any massive drop-offs, for them over the next couple of years. So LA, they won the tiebreaker to get in over Golden State, so They probably feel pretty good about where they're at. They feel good about the youth they're getting. I think they're in good shape going forward for the future. In the East, Cleveland beat Chicago 4-1. Maybe this could have been a little bit closer, but you know, when you consider if you're looking at Indiana, are you surprised that they got the split on the road? You're not, and you figure Indiana is going to defend their home court. Chicago. Oh, my goodness. Chicago versus Cleveland, you know, they got the split in Cleveland. And, once they've done that, if they defend their home court, it's a 5-game series. So, yeah, Chicago, they had a rough go of things trying to get through Cleveland. Yeah, you split at home in the playoffs, especially as the team that doesn't start with home court. And it's usually a short series. What can Chicago do to improve their team going forward? Well, you know, the good news is Kyle Macy is 24, has room to improve. Robert Reed is 25, has room to improve. All of their key players, well, Martin Webster is 29, but all their key players are 24, 25. So there's still opportunities for them to improve. The thing that I would consider doing if I was Chicago, and I know they've put Michael Cooper on the trade block, probably because they weren't very satisfied with his scoring this season. And, you know, nor should they be. He averaged 13.5 points in the regular season. That fell to just 11.4 in the playoffs. So, and he only shot 40% from the field for the playoffs. So Cooper was their biggest star, and he turned out to be their biggest disappointment. So maybe they move off him. If they can't move off him, my first recommendation would be to put some points into training his offense. I think I think he's obviously got the defensive chops to headline a team, but they need more offense around him. We'll come back to Cleveland after reviewing their second round. And jump over to New Jersey and Milwaukee. Now, this was, I think, the surprise of the playoffs. New Jersey rose up and beat Milwaukee in 6, which meant they had to go into Milwaukee and win twice on the road to come away with that, which is made even more impressive by the fact that you take a look and, you know, they split the first 2 games to take home court, but then Milwaukee split it to take it right back. So then they won 2 more games, but as I commented in the town hall for this, game 1 was a 1-point win. Game 3 was a 2-point win. Game 4 was a 1-point win. So they came up on the right side of a lot of close games. And, you know, so New Jersey, they did the thing. They did beat the Bucks. It certainly wasn't close. But, you know, you kind of wonder how much, you know, how much clutch gene does New Jersey have, especially when you look at, you know, the results of their next series. And, you know, is this a team that people are going to fear now? Milwaukee, I think, you know, as mentioned earlier, they were missing Hanslick for that. Is that enough to make a difference? It's tough to tell. I think the big difference came at power forward and point guard, and Hanslick plays small forward. So I don't know that he would have been directly involved in those matchups. But if I'm Milwaukee, you know, I'm fine with it. You know, all of my key rotation pieces are young and going to get better. And of course, you know, Robert Parrish is not young, but he's in his prime. He's a monster. So I think the Bucks are in a good place. If anything, I can see the Bucks trying to trade a bit player or two and maybe a draft pick to just fortify their team. I don't think they're in sell mode by any stretch of the imagination. And if they can add one more piece, there's not really going to be the opportunity to do that in free agency because the free agent pool is garbage. You know, they have a chance to come back stronger than ever. And I'm going to take a quick break here again just to wet my whistle, and then we'll be back to discuss the second round. This break will be a lot shorter.
How often do you think about the air you breathe? Oxygen, gas of life, or secret military death vapor? Tonight.
As promised, I'm back. Hopefully that was short enough for you. In the second round of the playoffs, we got Phoenix versus Denver, Portland versus San Antonio, New Jersey and Boston, and Cleveland versus Indiana. We'll start, you know, again, going west to east. One of the things that caught my eye when the playoffs started was the Magic Johnson injury. I knew he would come back midway through the second round, and the question on my mind, and I'm sure on anybody who was paying attention, certainly on Denver and Dallas, who knew they'd be facing up with Phoenix in the second round, was can we steal games from Phoenix before Magic gets back? Because I think at full strength, Phoenix is as intimidating a team as there is in the league. You know, Indiana might be scarier, but Magic Johnson as the MVP, definitely scary. So in games 1 and 2, you know, Denver did what they had to. They went into Phoenix and stole game 2. That got them home court. They won both games to go up 3-1 before Magic could come back. And I think that put them in the catbird seat back in Phoenix. Phoenix won, but they closed out the Suns by a score of 131 to 119 in game 6, which, quite honestly, I'm sure was about their best case scenario. I was kind of expecting Magic to come back in, and this is something that I'll talk about, you know, lineups and playoff scheming and so forth. Magic played small forward for Phoenix all season long. When he came back from his injury, he was slotted in at the point guard spot, and I think that may have been a tactical error. Not because he did a bad job playing point guard. He was absolutely dominant in the couple of games that he played. If you look at his playoff averages, he averaged 32 points, 11.5 assists, you know, 4.5 rebounds. So it's not that he did a bad job offensively. It's that Alex English went nuts in both of those games. And if Magic is allegedly one of the all-defensive players in the league, I think you would have liked to see him matched up with English at small forward to try and contain him. So, you know, what could have been done differently for the Suns? I would have liked to see them have gone down with Magic trying to slow down Alex English, because Alex English basically is, for all intents and purposes, the Denver offense. And that's going to be the challenge, quite honestly, as they come up against Portland, that Portland is going to have to figure out is how do you slow down Alex English? The answer is nobody has so far. If you look at your playoff leaders right now, Alex English is averaging 39.1 points per game. That is how Denver has been winning. And, I think, again, depending on how far they go, they may be happy with their team. They may try to sell off a draft pick to get one more piece in the immediate future. But if I'm Denver, I'm very happy with where I'm at. Portland and San Antonio, this was kind of an interesting injury matchup. San Antonio was missing their starting point guard. Portland was missing their starting shooting guard. As mentioned earlier, Bernard King out. Portland wins this one 4-1. Even though Portland was the lower seed, they had home court because Fast Break Basketball, like the NBA, recognizes regular season and not seeding as the tie break for the home court. So because Portland finished with more regular season wins, they did as I look at the games here, I realize, they were at San Antonio for games 1 and 2. So I guess they don't recognize the seeding there. So my apologies. They did get a split in San Antonio. Shows, this is what happens when I'm on vacation. I assume things, right? So Portland went into San Antonio, won game 1, lost game 2, but that meant they had home court. Won games 2 and 3, and I'm surprised, or games 3 and 4. I'm surprised we won game 5. I would have thought we would have finished things at home, but I'll take it. What happened there? Quite honestly, I think Carlos had it right. Not having a point guard was kind of difficult. Andrew Toney stepped in, did a great job in terms of scoring, but assists were a little bit low. Looking just for example at game 5, he had 38 points and 3 assists. In game 4, Toney had 20 points and 6 assists. Game 3, Toney went for 27 points, 5 assists. And you compare that with what they're used to from the point guard position on the season from Kelvin Ranzi, where they're getting 11 points on 45% shooting, but they're also getting 7 assists and just a couple of turnovers. So I think, I'm not sure that Portland would have been able to win if Ranzi were there, you can only play who's in front of you. So for that reason, Portland moved on. As far as San Antonio's future goes, again, this is a team where all of the key pieces, with the possible exception of Mike Gale, who was kind of pressed into service, are young. So again, this is a team that I don't think makes a lot of moves. I think San Antonio is probably pretty happy where they're at. They won the division. They can rationalize the playoff loss as to having a key player injured, and all their guys are younger and getting better. As you go across to the Eastern Conference, Indiana prevails in 7 over Cleveland. Indy was pressed by Cleveland a little more than I thought they would be. I didn't think this would be a sweep, but I thought Indy would win it in 5. But instead, we saw a split of games 1 and 2, split of games 3 and 4, and then chalk the rest of the way. I thought it would go Indy winning games 1 and 2, a split in games 3 and 4, and then Indy winning game 5 to close out. So props to Cleveland for fighting here. And so, as Cleveland heads into the offseason, you might wonder how do they feel about themselves. I think they feel pretty good. Their key players, Rick Mahorn, are 22, Jim Paxson, 23, Sidney Moncrief, 23. Paxson and Moncrief were your starting all-star backcourt for the East. So Cleveland, I think, will be trying to find some scoring and defense in the power forward spot. right now they're using Kenny Carr as their small forward, and he went for 21 and 4 on the season. So I don't know if they're going to get much sorry, he went for 20 and 8 rebounds on the season. So I think they're happy with their small forward. I think, you know, they'd like to improve on, you know, Joe Merriweather at 10 points and 7 boards. So that's going to be their point of emphasis. They can probably pick up, if not an improvement on Merriweather, at least some depth and a future player to develop at power forward in the draft, which does seem to have several power forwards available at the slot they're likely to be picking. And then New Jersey and Boston. Now, New Jersey has been the surprise of the playoffs thus far. I was surprised they beat Milwaukee. I was surprised they beat Boston, especially, you know, to win a game 7 in the Garden and to do it pretty convincingly. They won by 28 points. It wasn't even close. You know, in fact, you know, you look at this season, the series rather, and there was only one close game, and that one was game 2, which they lost in Boston. Every other game was a double digit nearly win. And so how did they do it? Well, you know, they did it on the back of Daryl Dawkins and Cliff Robinson and T.R. Dunn and Larry Drew. And New Jersey, I think, is the team that people ought to if they don't find scary, because everybody on this team, at least in their starting lineup, has a very well-defined role. George Johnson is there for defense and shot blocking. He's not going to take shots away from Dawkins. He's not going to take shots away from Robinson. Dunn and Drew are just ripping people apart in the backcourt. They've been consistent scorers. And the scariest thing about New Jersey is, with the exception of Johnson, they're all super young. You know, Dawkins is 24, Robinson 21, T.R. Dunn's 26, Larry Drew's 23. So, you know, the priority for them in the offseason is going to be to make sure that Johnson doesn't slip too badly and hopefully get someone to replace Johnson at the center spot. So they'll be shopping hard for a center. But if I'm New Jersey, I'm very happy where I'm at. If I'm Boston, I'm frustrated because, you know, we had this series. They had Kareem, who was the DPOY. Boston was a team that built around Mo Cheeks and older guys. And it didn't work out for them this year. You know, Brian Winters, 29, Ricky Sobers, 27, Junior Bridgman, 27. Sorry, Sobers is 28. Kareem, 34. Elvin, 35. So this is a team that was constructed for the short term, and they got blown through by New Jersey, who's young and constructed for the long term. That's got to be terrifying. I'm not saying that Angry Banana should panic. What I am saying is that he's going to have to take a very hard look at his team and how they flamed out in the playoffs and ask, you know, where and how and why do I need an upgrade? And when I'm trying to figure out, you know, what went wrong, you know, the first place I look to is, I hate to say it, point guard. I mean, Mo Cheeks did great with 15 assists, but he had just 9 points. I've kind of been on this train all season with Mo Cheeks. I love his passing. Not thrilled with the rest of his game. And I don't know that you can stand pat on Mo Cheeks. I'm not going to say to trade him. And he does have the capacity to develop offensively. You know, he has a C rating for his inside score, which means he's going to become a better scorer. I wonder if that's enough. And if I were in Boston's shoes, I would certainly not spend my training points on my old guys. I would be training up Mo Cheeks to become a megastar. And that probably means sinking a lot of training, not just into his inside score for scoring ability, but probably into his defense as well, and maybe into his rebounding. I mean, he's a player that's really good at what he's good at, and he's really bad at what he's not. And so he's just going to need to get some extra help, you know, in terms of being developed in those areas. And so that leaves us with conference finals of Portland and Denver. If I'm looking at, you know, who I think is going to win there, Obviously, I hope, you know, being that Portland is my team, that Portland is able to come up with an answer for Denver. But I've looked up and down. I have no idea how we're going to stop Alex English. If I figure out a way to stop Alex English, I think we have a chance. If we don't, Denver is going to the finals. It's that simple. It's stop Alex English. For Indiana and New Jersey, these are teams that, quite frankly, they almost look like mirror images of each other. They're both very, very young. They both have a dynamic scoring guard big man combo. You know, for Indiana, it's Adrian Dantley and Joe Barry Carroll, and they're playing at the shooting guard and center positions. For New Jersey, it's Daryl Dawkins at the power forward and Larry Drew at the point guard. And yeah, I think New Jersey has a little more punch coming from their wings. You know, Cliff Robinson and T.R. Dunn have been doing a great job scoring. If I'm Indiana, I'm a little bit concerned about where my scoring outside of Dawkins and Dantley is going to come from. James Silas has been huge for them off the bench. He's their third option. What they don't have in New Jersey does have is a fourth option. And the other thing that just fascinates me about this is these players aren't going head-to-head. They're like slightly offset. So, you know, who do I think is going to win? Indiana has just been so good all season long, and they have home court. And New Jersey has had two squeaker upsets. My heart says New Jersey, but my head says Indiana. So I'm going to pick Indiana to move forward. And again, my heart says Portland, but my head says Denver, just because Portland has nobody on defense that's going to slow down Alex English. I invested some points into developing some defense, but we all know if you look at Portland on the year, what does Portland rank in defensive rating in terms of opponents' points? They're 20th out of 23 teams. You know, how do we rank in terms of stopping field goal percentage? 18th out of 23 teams. Portland doesn't defend, and I think this is when it catches up with us. I hope I'm wrong, but you know, if you're asking me to use my head, and especially with Bernard King out, I don't know where we're going to find enough points. You know, again, I'm going to hope, but if I'm looking at things rationally without Bernard King and with no way of stopping Alex English, I don't see how we're going to get through this. Again, hope I'm wrong. So give me Denver, give me Indiana. I probably will not be doing another one of these by the end of the off season. So I guess we'll see everybody around draft time. Thanks for hanging out with the cat, and we'll wrap it up for this time. And good luck to all four final team. Well, no, good luck to New Jersey and Indiana in the Eastern Conference Finals. And sorry, Denver, I can't wish you good luck against me. But, you know, no injuries. How about that? So with that, I'll wrap things up, and we'll continue on until the next chat with a cat.